Today's episode of Writer Nation is sponsored by author Harper Kincaid. If you're looking for hot, steamy romance, she just released a three-book series called Break On Through. You can get Girl Breaker, Heartbreaker, and Rule Breaker on Amazon.com. Find out more about Harper and her books at HarperKincaid.com and make sure to check her out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Welcome to the Writer Nation podcast. Welcome to the Writer Nation podcast. I am your host, Jenny Kate. Today's episode was recorded last month when I was in Washington, D.C. for the kickoff of the fall get-together of the Washington Romance Writers. My conversation is with Miss Mary Karen Meredith. MK is one of my favorite people on the whole planet. She's a wife, she's a working mother of two, a cancer fighter, and she's also the author of seven steamy romance novels. So she and I met years ago before she had actually published her novels out in Colorado Springs at Pikes Peak Writers. She's just wonderful and lovely, and I hope that you enjoy this conversation about her journey and her trials and tribulations, getting through, you know, a lot of pretty difficult stuff and becoming a writer. So I hope that the conversation helps motivate you to keep writing or keep doing whatever it is that you're doing in your life. So with that, I give you Miss Mary Karen Meredith. Let's start with, so MK writes romance.
Yes.
And you've been doing that for now how many years?
So I've been published now for 3 years. Mm-hmm. This is going into the third year, I think.
Yeah.
2015. So this is the second year. So after July, yeah, so this is the very beginning of my third year. But I've been writing for probably 15.
And so I think that's important for people to know is that, you know, you can write because you need to write for that long to understand the craft. And so I think that's very important for new writers in particular to understand the million words, the books that you're just not going to publish, but get them out of your system and learn the craft.
Yes.
So let's go back to, 15 years ago, where were you and what were you doing?
So I was an occupational therapist. That's what I went to school for. I have my bachelor's in OT with a minor in biology. And I've done occupational therapy in a different range. I originally was going to do PT, and then I found out about traumatic brain injury and fell in love with that. Unfortunately, we were Air Force. I mean, I hate to say it like that, but
so
we moved around.
And so funny, we did not actually meet because our husbands are Air Force.
No, which
we
is
met
so
because
funny.
Of Pikes Peak Writers, and then understood that the reason we were all in Colorado Springs is for the same reason.
And then we got to stay with each other in Virginia because of Air
right,
Force. So it's like the Air Force kept us together, but the writing brought us together.
That's right. So you're doing OT and you move.
So I was doing occupational therapy. I really wanted to do traumatic brain injury, but we were moving around. So there's only a few clinics, TBI clinics in the country. So I started doing everything else. I was home health and acute rehab in the hospital and outpatient rehab and all this other stuff. Anyway, I loved the people. Didn't love the way our medical industry with the insurance and everything runs because I really feel that they push practitioners to walk the line of ethics very shakily. I don't know if that's a word.
Well, rather than preventive medication, we're talking about, rather than preventive measures, we're talking about medication. Is that what you mean?
Actually, when you really get into the medical field, even though they say it's all about the patient, it all becomes about billing.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, I didn't get along with it very well because I'm so much a people person.
Right.
I really care about the people. So anyway, I just had that thought once. I'm like, if I could do something that I love to do and didn't actually feel like work, what would it be? And I realized that all my jobs I've always driven because I did home health. And when I first started my new job, I worked in Biloxi, Mississippi, but lived in Pensacola, Florida. So it was a 2-hour and 10-minute commute both each way. And I did that for a year because I didn't like that area to want to live there. Anyway, so I just had that conversation. I realized that all the time, and I've been a prolific romance writer since I was like 11. Virginia Henley was the first book. My dad gave it to me.
Virginia Henley,
yes. And when I told her, I met her in Reno in 2005, and I told her I read her book
when
at
you were
11, and she was mortified.
Oh, no.
She's like, why? Your parents should not have let you read my books yet.
I might have been slightly older than that before I got my first one. That's hilarious.
And my dad's the one who pushed it at me, you know? It's like
my grandmother gave me my first one.
So funny. And And so I just realized that with all my driving, I was always kind of doing these stories in my head to entertain myself. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, I need to write. If I maybe someday can make a living at it, I need to be a romance writer. Mm-hmm. It's like been part of me for so long. So I started writing. I went home and I told my husband, I said, hey, I want to write romance. And he was just like, do it. You've done everything else you put your mind to, do it. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, you're awesome.
And that was how long ago?
That was like 15 years ago, 15 yeah. or 16 years ago. So that's when I started writing. So I had the story in my head and kind of plotted out some things and started writing. But I was working and writing was hard.
Yeah.
So I'd write a little bit here, a little bit there, and I was dreaming about it and thinking about it and talking about mm-hmm. it, but I wasn't doing it
yeah.
very much, you know? And so I did that for a while. And then we moved up to Omaha, Nebraska from Abilene, Texas. And I was like, I really need to get into this more. But then we bought a house and I started a new job and then we started having children.
Yeah.
So I was writing that whole time, but it was like a paragraph a day, you know, here and there. Well, then I wrote Victoria Alexander, who is one of my favorite historical romance authors. She is a hoot. I absolutely adore her. And I'm so fortunate to call her a close friend now. But I am a total dork and I wrote her fan mail, but I put a picture of me and my daughter in there thinking it would be like less creepy that way. Cause I was like, hey, you know, it's like a mom and her little baby. And I wrote her a letter. I'm like, hey, you know, I'm a huge fan. I just saw that you're here in Omaha.
You want to get together for coffee?
I would love to get together with coffee.
You didn't.
I
did. Awesome.
I figured the worst thing she could do was say no.
Yep. Oh, yes.
Would you ever consider getting to coffee and let me chat to you about the industry? Well, she sent me an email back telling me about Romance Authors of the Heartland, which is a local chapter of Romance Writers of America.
Gotcha.
And those women are my
first. What year is this?
This is 2004.
So this is when you went to your very first RWA.
Nope, it can't be.
Nope.
So the Victoria Alexander and Romance Authors of the Heartland has to be 2006 because that's when Anya was born and she was a few months old.
Okay.
So that was 2006. So now we're in Omaha, 2006. My first baby's born. Mm-hmm. I'm settled in my job. I need to get back to writing. And that was my first writing home. So Cheryl St. John, who's an amazing writer, is there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sherry Shackelford mm-hmm. is there. Just Eve Savage. Just these beautiful, amazing women who helped me grow. And I will say Cheryl St. John, she's the first person to look at me, like besides my husband, she looked at me and she said, you're going to make it. I can see it. You're going to make
it. Isn't that fantastic?
It's amazing. And I'll never forget it because I got chills the day she said it to me and it was with such conviction. And then Terrell Oswald, she is another writer. She gave me this opportunity because she saw how hard I was working. So one year she sent me all expenses paid to Romance Writers of America in Anaheim.
No, she didn't.
She did. It was
how
amazing.
Fantastic.
I've never had anything happen to me like that. Mm-hmm. My friend Eve Savage called me. I was at Target. And she's like, did you get the email? And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. She said, Terrell is sending us to Romance Writers of America, all expenses paid. And
wow.
I started crying at Target because I didn't know what to do with that kind of information. And
so just so everybody knows, Romance Writers of America is the largest professional group for fiction writers in the United States.
Yes.
Period.
And they're amazing.
And they are amazing. And it's very important for writers to get involved with a professional organization because it's not a corporation. And corporation has professional development for you, right? Whereas in the writing community, that's what RWA does for romance writers. And it's very, very important for, I mean, not only just so you can learn your craft, but learn the business. Because business is hard.
Right.
You know, and so you went to Anaheim. That would have been in what, 2006 or 7?
That was 2012. So I'm kind of jumping.
Oh, no. Okay, so let's go back then.
Yeah.
So let's go back to Omaha. You're doing pharmaceutical sales in Omaha, right?
Yep, for AstraZeneca at the time. Yep. And so I started going to Romance Authors of the Heartland once a month.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where every time there was a workshop, we would talk business, we would talk craft, and then we would have a meeting about, and I'm in there with Victoria Alexander and with Cheryl St. John, and I'm, you know, blown away and trying not to act like too much of a fangirl. but I learned so much from them. And going to those meetings, for real, everybody, it's very motivating. Like, you want to go home and write.
Right.
So I started writing more. And then, so my very first book took me 5 years to write because I was only doing it here and there in between everything. So anyway, that was, now we're getting to 2007, 2008, moving along there. And I'm just writing as I'm going. And And then in 2012, I got the trip to RWA. I had gone once before in 2005. I was pregnant with Anya.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Reno. It was my first RWA.
Okay.
I went all by myself. And it was fine, but I had really bad morning sickness.
Oh, no.
So that was a great experience. That's when I met Virginia Henley, which was amazing. Mm-hmm. But then I hadn't gone. And then I had this talk with my husband, because I always had this guilt of when I was going away from the family or spending money on something that was outside of the family.
I think we all do. Mothers get that way. I mean, not to slam dads, but we do. We get such guilt about what we're doing that doesn't involve our family and our children.
It's very true.
It's hard.
Mm-hmm. It is. And my husband told me, he's like, if you're going to take this seriously, you have to put time and money on it. He goes, I love my job, and I spend over 8 hours a day, Monday through Friday, at it. He goes, if you love writing, mm-hmm. you need to spend the time on it.
That's what I love about Brian. Yeah. He's so supportive.
He is incredibly supportive. He's been my biggest champion, mm-hmm. and he pushes me to spend the money, to invest. Like, he even told me, you know, we're looking at our budget recently, and he's like, how much are you spending in advertising every month? And in my mind, I'm like, every month. You know what I mean? Like, I'm such a cheap ass.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, seriously, you need to do your business plan and figure out what you need to be spending every month so we can fit this into the budget.
Because everybody out there, you as a writer are your own small business, and you need to have that business plan. Absolutely.
You absolutely do. Yep. He challenged me, and I know we're jumping around years, but a few years ago when we were in Colorado Springs, because after Omaha, we went to Colorado Springs, which is where I got to meet Jenny.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The amazing woman who's sitting in front of me right now.
Thanks.
We were on our way from Colorado Springs to Denver, and we had this conversation. He's like, I want to challenge you to be a peacock. I'm driving, and I looked at him. I'm like, what the? What just happened? I'm like, a peacock. He goes, yes, a peacock and all its beautiful feathers. Well, it can't be that beautiful with only one feather. He said, so you need to think about yourself as a writing peacock, and one feather is marketing, and one is branding, one is craft.
Look at him with the metaphor.
And he's like, you can't be the most beautiful writer unless you have all of your feathers as healthy and as, you know, full as they possibly can be.
Mm-hmm.
And so he challenged me to sit down, write a business plan with that peacock analogy in mind, and use each feather to make sure I had my action, my smart, you know, mm-hmm. action plan for each one, what my mission statement, what kind of writing I wanted to do, and even a sample budget.
That is fantastic.
So I sat down and did that, and then it was funny because then things started happening
mm-hmm.
because I had these goals, even if they were little goals, and it's really amazing how even when you make little goals and you start achieving them, and then you're ready to make more goals
right.
and you start achieving them, that things actually start to move forward.
Because that's where the writer truly has to understand that you can produce whatever creativity and, you know, creative book that you have in your soul. You can do that all day.
Yeah.
If you want to get it out to the people and share that with the world, you better have a plan to do that. And that's where you have to turn off that one side of your brain and turn on the other side
yeah.
and get that business plan together.
You have to.
Your marketing plan, your budget,
business,
all of it.
Yes.
You have to.
Mm-hmm. And the idea that you're going to get an agent or a publisher and they're going to do it all for you, that may have been how
sure,
it worked.
In 1985.
With,
yeah.
yes,
not anymore,
with
girls.
Scott Gerald or mm-hmm. Fitzgerald or, you know, whoever classic writers that you think about. Or even 1985 or whatever. But it's not...
Not today
anymore. Mm-hmm. No, you can get on with a publisher and still have to do full-on promotion. You still have to know yourself as a small business.
Mm-hmm.
Also, because with publishers, they have their business.
Right.
You're a small business within that. All of their business decisions are not always going to coincide with what's best for your small business.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to have a strong sense of who you are
mm-hmm.
in that small business so that you don't get derailed. Or if you do get derailed, how to bring yourself back.
And
right.
what you mean by that, so, and I'm going to just kind of jump to a conclusion here.
Yes.
When you're writing a book and you start querying agents are going to come back with, hey, I like it, but,
yep.
and let's look at changes and stuff. And sometimes that's compatible with your thought about how you would like for your career to go, and sometimes it isn't.
That's exactly right.
So I know you had an agent and actually you had an agent that didn't work out because
yes.
she wanted to do some changes with your work that you weren't prepared for. And then, so let's start with Colorado. So let's kind of, we'll unpack that. But let's go, you moved from Omaha to Colorado.
Right.
Got involved with
Pikes Peak Writers. Which is
yep.
another, I've been so lucky.
Me too. I love
with
Pikes
where
Peak
we've
Writers.
Been moving and,
mm-hmm.
and the amazing writing community there.
I am really astounded by the writing community. I love it.
I
and
know.
If you, when you start looking for it, you really, I mean, I hate to say you really can find it, but you can.
You can.
And it's truly, a gift because you do get you know, derailed and you get unmotivated. And
yeah.
These
and
people provide such,
writers.
Yeah, we do.
We
and
do.
We provide inspiration for each other to keep going.
Yes.
You know, I've been here like a day and a half and I'm already like, oh, I get 5 months off and I'm going to write like 7,000 books, you know, I'm going to write 7,000 words,
yes.
But at least I'm motivated to
yep.
do it. So, all right. So you joined Pikes Peak Writers.
Right, right. And I started going to those conferences. Mm-hmm. And that's where I met my first agent.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that I ended up pulling off from her is because when I was writing the book that we were going to take out, I felt like I wanted to take it in a little bit of a different mm-hmm. direction. Like, I didn't feel completely understood.
Sure.
And so I just felt like, well, if we're not kind of on the same path,
mm-hmm.
then it's probably not the path that I should be on.
Which is very difficult for a writer when
it's
they get
so
their very first
hard.
Agent because you're so excited
and
you feel legitimized and you've got some credibility.
Yes.
And it takes a lot of guts to say, hey, this may not work out for us. And it's
and
not personal.
It's not.
You know,
and,
it's, there's and, always somebody who'll love your work, I believe.
There is, and you just mm-hmm. have to find them. And it's just like readers, right? Some readers are going to love your stuff and some
yep.
aren't. Some agents are going to love your stuff and some aren't. And the thing is if we're all really honest, there is a sense of desperation when you're a writer, when you're trying to make things happen
sure.
and you want to get an agent and you want to get a publisher because you want that dream that
mm-hmm.
you see others have. So sometimes you will connect with an agent that maybe you shouldn't,
mm-hmm.
not because there's anything wrong with them or your writing, but it's just not the right
thing. Sure, the chemistry is just not there.
Right.
And that's okay.
And but we will say yes anyway, or they will ask us anyway.
Well, sure, because we want the street cred,
right,
and you know
yeah.
you feel good, and
yeah,
yeah of course.
So let her go, kept writing,
mm-hmm.
and then I had really been hearing a lot of great things about Entangled
mm-hmm.
Publishing, and I had met the founder, Liz Peltier,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden I'm forgetting how to say everybody's last name. Anyway, and through one of my sweet friends who had asked me to go to like this writing retreat. Anyway, and so I really kind of started following what they were doing in the new, you know what I mean, in the writing news and all of that kind of stuff. And I
yeah, she made quite a splash when
submitted
she
submitted to
them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I sat in a briefing with her it's a workshop at Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers, I think the first year she was doing them. And the platform that she was talking about with, you know, every submission gets two passes so that it's not just one person reading the slush pile, and you know they were having a lot of people look at the work. I was really impressed with what she was trying to do.
Right.
You know, now she's grown that to be pretty large company.
She has, mm-hmm. and they're doing great. And that's who my first five books are with them.
Mm-hmm.
But that is also where I learned about a publisher's business and my small business
mm-hmm.
because my first two books with them. Were a series, a Malibu series, and I originally had four or five books in mind for that series, and they took two, and they passed on the third one. And then I proposed an offshoot,
mm-hmm.
which they picked up, and that was supposed to be four books, and they did the first two, because I think for them, as a publishing, they're really hoping that I would kind of organically break out, and that wasn't happening yet. It's very hard to do that
sure
on
is.
Your
mm-hmm.
own or with a publisher
yep.
if it's going to be organically happening.
Yeah.
So for them, and I'm sure they thought it wasn't good business to keep moving forward with a series if the series hadn't picked up yet.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, talking to everybody, you know, they say it's your fourth or fifth or your sixth or seventh book in.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time in a series that readers can grab onto, and because of the decisions that they needed to make for their business, I felt like my readers couldn't, you know, the readers couldn't do that with me because I had two books in one series. Now I had two books
yep.
in another series. And so that's why just recently I released my first book in a brand new series
mm-hmm.
that I'm super excited about. And I have a huge vision for this thing. And I kind of feel almost in the sense I'm not really starting over, but I've just kind of been in this one steady pace.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm hoping now I'm going to really focus on this series and really build out this series and give my readers a town and a family
mm-hmm.
And a home that they can go to and become part of to where they're not going to want to leave.
And you're going to put that out on your own on Amazon and everywhere else.
The first book is out. It's called Love on the Cape. And
okay.
It's on the Cape
that,
novel.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, it's Cape Van Buren. Mm-hmm. And that first, the response to it has been amazing.
It's adorable. I have read it, believe
so
it or not. I did read it. Yes, I thought I loved it. Mm-hmm.
I have gotten such amazing responses for that. And everybody's ready for book two. That's On Around the Cape.
And when is that coming out?
My intention was for it to be able to come out November.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I'm going to be able to make that happen because of life.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm hoping winter, within the winter time frame,
mm-hmm.
that'll be coming out. So I'm really excited. And that's the character from books one's best friend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
it's Larkin is the heroine for book one. It's her best friend, Blaine.
Oh, okay. So her story.
Yes, it's her story.
All right. I'm looking forward to that. So we'll keep in touch and we can make sure we get it out. That'll be fun.
Oh.
So, okay, let's go back to Colorado because what I do know about you in Colorado is your kids are getting older.
Yes.
And you're writing at the house.
Full time, yep.
And you become the Pikes Peak Writers Conference
director. For 2014.
For 2014.
Yes.
So that year I have to do some social media and communications and stuff with a bunch of folks, you know, who are the community in Pikes Peak Writers is just fantastic. So you're kind of a whole crew of people to help out. But a huge undertaking for you.
It was because I was brand new to the to Pikes Peak Writers in general, so I wasn't even I wasn't even sure how everything worked.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a little bit of shadowing for the director for the year prior, but it wasn't the kind of shadowing where I knew why she did something or what exactly she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I was just kind of an observer of, you know, running meetings and stuff like that. So then when I started doing it, I did it and we got it done, but I really did ask a lot of questions and definitely needed help on the direction from, you know, on the direction we were taking or how from other people, MB Partlow and Jenny LaPointe and so many others, while we were, you know, getting this going, because they've been part of it for so long and they know what needed to come next.
So what do you think was the biggest thing you learned about yourself and writing and, you know, the community and that sort of thing, being the director?
Probably the biggest thing I learned, maybe, that is such a good question.
So everybody knows, just so you kind of know, they have it's a 3-day conference. It's like a 2.5-day conference.
Wonderful.
But then they have the prequel on Thursday. So, if you do all of it, it's like a 3.5-day deal. And it's, you know, I love it. And you have 1,000 different things you can do while you're there.
Great.
And by the time you're done, you're spent because it's, you know, it's a little overwhelming with the amount of stuff that you get to do. But you're completely motivated to be writing for the next year, you know. And you meet a lot of really great people. But it requires months and months and months of planning, which start, like, that conference, conference is in April, planning starts in May, and then...
For the next,
Yep.
I think the biggest thing I learned, tell me the question again, just as far as writing
So what did you learn? What did you learn about yourself? Did you find that maybe, you know, you learned some more organizational techniques, or did you learn how to be a better leader, or what did you understand about yourself as you became that director?
I think one of the big things was I'm a big relationship person.
Yes, you are.
And...
Yes, you are.
You just made me say hee-hee. and it was that ended up being a very big part of it with there, because one of the things I learned is as a leader, I feel personally that one of a very effective way is to be a relationship builder, because when you know how to build relationships with people, they want to work with you and they want to make things happen. So I feel like if you can really connect and be open to everybody, and also as a leader, you're a servant.
Mm-hmm.
You are there to help, to do what needs to be done for the people that you're with, as they are going to help you. And I feel like that's how you're going to be most effective, because I saw examples of leadership that was without the relationship and that was not in a serving kind of mode.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw examples of leadership that was building those relationships and then that serving mode. And I definitely see a big difference.
I think writers can take that. So when you think of yourself as a small business, you have a team of people that work with you. Whether you want to believe that or not, you create the work, great. You also have people who are going to edit, they're going to line edit, they're going to read your arcs, they're going to help you publicize, they're going to help you put it out. I mean, there's a whole team, and I kind of go with the it takes a village, it takes a team mentality, because it does. But if you don't understand that you, as the center of that team, is you're networking, building relationships with these people, and empowering them to help you.
Yes.
You know, you value their input and you value their professionalism, and you build that relationship with them so that, not that everybody's happy, because it's not about making people happy. It's about making people effective. And yes, it's about making people feel valued.
Valued. And that's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Right. You have to, in order to build that team that you want.
Right. And being
it's effective.
And feeling valued are two different things.
Yes.
Because your ideas and their ideas with how something should be done may not always coincide.
Right.
In that instance, it's your business. But they need to be valued and heard so that they continue, even when you come into a situation where what you want and what they want isn't the same thing, they still want.
Well, because at the end of the day, when the product is put out, they're fulfilled, right?
Yes.
Because they have helped produce something into the world and bring it to the people.
Right.
And I think that's important for writers to understand too, is, you know, you're building this wonderful product and wonderful, you know, piece of culture that you are bringing to the masses, and that you want a piece of yourself out there. And so build that great team around you to help you do that.
Absolutely. And I think for me, I'm an extrovert. So relationship building is just, I guess, an easy thing, or it's not necessarily easy or hard. It's just, I crave it. Like,
yeah.
When
oh,
I
me
see
too.
You, I
me
want
too.
You like in my arms.
Right.
Which may be a little not right, but
it's
you
not
know,
weird at all. Don't worry
I
about
just
it.
Want to connect.
Yes.
And I love just, I don't know, learning about people and being around them. And that energizes me. Not everybody's like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is absolutely fine for introverts. Being open to this relationship building and being open to networking doesn't mean you have to put yourself in the middle of 100.
Right. You can network with just
room.
Me and you talking.
Yes.
We're networking.
Go
we're
to
building
a conference. And we've talked about this before. Go to a conference and make a goal of over the weekend connecting with three people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It can be little bits here and there, but that openness, those, you know, that three people this weekend, that person next weekend, that will start building a whole tribe under you that you didn't even realize was there.
And you need it. It's just important.
It is. And then you can step away.
Well, okay, so from Colorado, now you're in D.C., which is funny because you guys came here, what, a year before we did, I think? Or maybe there was a year difference.
Well,
I just don't remember
here.
Who was here first.
You
maybe
here
I was here first.
You were part of
Romance, right? Yeah, WRW.
Thank you.
Yes.
Not talk.
Right. Where are we?
I know. And you introduced me to Jessica Snyder.
Right. So Washington Romance Writers is what... So D.C. has a prolific writing community.
Yes.
A massive writing community. And John Grisham lives here. And he's not John Grisham, sorry. Dave Baldacci lives here. He's one of my favorites.
Oh, awesome.
But there's a Mystery Writers of America community that's really good. And Alexandria Writers is really good. But what I found is with WRW, one of the largest chapters in RWA is their craft workshops are just beyond compare.
Right.
And so that's why I started
seriously
hanging out with them.
Compare.
Yes.
Like, I was so shocked. Not because the other groups weren't good, but just because the WRW were that good.
They really,
like,
yes.
Mm-hmm. We would, you know, come to meetings once a month doing these workshops that I would expect to get having paid, you know, $400 for a conference.
Yep.
And it's just part of my yearly thing with them.
Like, and like today we're going to hear Jamie Farrell talk about Facebook ads.
I can't wait.
You know, and this, I was just online yesterday or day before looking at a course on that, and somebody was going to charge, it's about $496. For something we're gonna get, for free.
Right. I know it's me, and it will be so robust.
Yes.
And so, detailed and so informative. I can't wait.
Okay, so you get here, and now you're with Entangled, and things are really kind of happening for you.
They're moving along.
Yep.
I'm working on books, and the year the first book, or the beginning of 2015. When we were getting ready to release Malibu Betrayals, is also when I got the first cancer diagnosis.
Oh.
And I remember calling them right away because I told my husband, I do not want this stupid cancer screwing up anything. So the first thing I did was I called my publisher. I'm like, look, I have cancer now, but do not change my deadline. I'm working through my edits. So I edited that book while going through the first initial diagnosis.
Oh, my
and the
goodness.
Mastectomy.
And I remember the stress. The stress was so
It was
bad.
Just, yeah. And my husband's at one point after the mastectomy, he's like, I don't know that you should be editing on Vicodin.
It's
great.
It's going right here.
It's going to be amazing. But funny thing was, is one of the first things they said is, you know, I called them and I'm like, I don't want my deadline changed. Mm-hmm. So the first thing they came back is, okay, well, we'll look at maybe, changing the deadline. I'm like, no, because I was so mad about that I got it, and I didn't want it taking anything. Like, that just wasn't fair.
Yeah.
It finally was getting published, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, then we didn't end up having to change it, and that worked all great. So yeah, so I was here and started publishing through Entangled,
mm-hmm.
and learning, still working on my small business. I'm not one of those people who had a super solid, confident view of who I was as a writer or a business person then.
Mm-hmm.
I have grown into it.
I am pretty sure that it was 2015 where we were driving out to the kind of the monthly get together in Boonesboro, where that's when it first happened, because Jessica at the time was editorial assistant,
yep.
at Entangled, and you had just gotten your contract with them. And I remember the drive out to Boonesboro was about an hour and a half, and you talked nonstop for an hour and a half about everything that was going on. It was fantastic. Because
very nice friend for saying it was fantastic.
It was fantastic. Because I learned from it, just like you talking about it. I mean, you learn from that experience, right? And so when writers can see other writers being successful, I don't think that provokes jealousy. I think that provokes motivation. And I think it helps people understand there is a path for you. You know, whether you're writing because it's therapeutic and by God, you're going to get that done, or you're writing because you've just got a story in your soul and you need to get it finished, and you're validated with, you know, a publisher or an editor or an agent telling you, this is good stuff, let's get it out.
Yes.
That is very inspirational to people. And so I remember that day very vividly because I was driving and it's...
we were in the back seat.
That's right. And we're riding through all these little bitty towns. We're going through the mountains and we're in the middle of nowhere. And MK is talking all about Entangled Publishing and how she's so excited about her new book. And those are the days everybody wants, right?
Yeah.
Those are the days writers want.
Good. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you mentioned jealousy, one thing writers have to get in their head is we're not in competition.
No,
with each
not
other.
At all.
There are so many books. There are so many readers.
And a reader for every book.
There is.
Yes.
Because you do amazing doesn't mean that because your books are selling, mine aren't. Or vice versa.
Right.
You know what I mean? Author names and brands start finding readership and they start building on their own. And it's completely separate from every other brand out there.
Mm-hmm.
So we really can just lift each other up, support each other. These days we're doing so much more co-marketing. When I see my friends succeed, that means it can happen to me too.
So that's what I was going to ask you. So tell us your favorite marketing techniques and give advice to a new writer that's trying to come up right now.
I think one thing that you really want to do is have a presence, even if it's difficult. Mm-hmm. Facebook right now is really a huge place for it.
Mm-hmm.
And be consistent. Don't put something out there and then stop. Slowly start connecting and networking with other writers,
mm-hmm.
and with romance readers. Start building a presence so that as you continue to write and you do get your book published, whether you publish it through Indie, which I think is an incredible route to take, or if you wait and do traditional through a publisher that you are starting, because publishers, agents are going to be looking for that. And if you're an indie, you need to already have people knowing who you are.
Yep.
As for writing goes, start writing.
Mm-hmm.
I know that sounds, it's such a lame piece of advice.
But if you don't have it, make product.
And it's hard. And yep. You know, one thing I realized is sometimes it's hard for me. It's almost like going to the gym. I fall off the wagon and it's
mm-hmm.
so hard to get back there. And I will angst about it. Like, I got to get back. I got to get back. And then I'll come up with excuses why I'm not sitting down. But I realized recently that if I think about the book, I really like my characters
mm-hmm.
and I really enjoy what they're going to. So actually, sitting down and kind of learning what happens next feels good.
Mm-hmm.
And so that allows me to sit down and I'll tell myself just 10 minutes or give yourself a time limit, 15 minutes, an hour, whatever you can fit in, and start writing. The first day might be a bit of a cogwheel. And then it's amazing how the second day is a little bit smoother. And the third day, you really are getting into the story and you
mm-hmm.
see where they're going. Just like at the gym. And then once you get back on the wagon, you want to keep doing it and you don't want to miss. And so then you're writing every day, even if it's a little bit, and you have to be realistic. I'm like sales by day and romance author by night. And because we live in a place that's very expensive and we really want our children to have all these choices. And that's another part of me where it feels really great to be able to do that for them. But I don't want anything to slow down with my writing.
Yeah.
So at first I used to do 2,000 words a day, Monday through Friday, with my nights and weekends off with the family. Can't really do that right now. So what I'm trying to do is an hour of writing a night, Monday through Friday. And then I try to do 2,000 words a day, Saturday, Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have, you know, the rest of the time with my family. it kind of makes me feel like every second of the day I have something going on, which right now I feel like I'm missing other things. Like this meeting that we're going to today, I was supposed to sign up for classes and I didn't realize it, but my wonderful friends are lifting me up and still letting that happen for me. Because I feel like there's certain things I'm missing, but they're not the important things with my family.
Right.
It ends up being my, you know, my other stuff, details that my amazing friends are helping me not miss.
Yeah, so for people who don't know, Finger Food Friday is the, you know, at the Meredith House, that is a lot of fun. Everybody. We do pizza movies all the time, and we make our own pizza, which is fun, at our house on Friday.
Love
That's
it.
Our
I
Friday
love
thing.
Pizza.
Yeah, I do too. I really shouldn't eat too much of it, but I really do. Well, I'm so glad that we got together while we were here in town. It's been about a year since we've seen each other, I think, or a little over. I left about a year or so ago.
I know, but so. I just saw you. Where did
oh, no, we were
you?
Just at Pikes Peak Writers together in April.
That's
right.
Where it was. I'm like, no,
that's
I just
right.
saw you. But I think I thought I was going to see you in July at Lori's thing, but I didn't make
it. No, right, because I didn't either. I couldn't come back. Yeah,
sorry,
with everything going on overseas, we just I needed to stay. But, so I'm thrilled that we got together this time and we got to do the podcast and, you know.
I just want you to move with me everywhere.
I know. You guys should come to Korea. That would be so fun. Or not.
Do you have a crickets sound effect though?
I put the crickets in there. Yes, the Korea is awesome and I love it. And everybody I know should come live with us.
Gosh,
that's awesome. Well, thank you very much for being on the show.
No, thank you so much. And I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
MK and I continued our conversation and focused on her fight against breast cancer. This final section is her story. The dialogue is a little bit fast-paced, kind of faster than normal, as I think we were both a little bit nervous. And it sort of does fade off at the end, but her outlook on cancer and the effect that it's had on her life is incredibly moving and I think really important. I really can't thank her enough for sharing it with me, and I hope that you stick around and enjoy the conversation as much as I did.
In the house.
Hi, guys.
In the dorm room. So we're in the hotel again.
Hello.
And I just found out, Posh 7, Loudoun County's magazine, you're going to be featured in there.
I am.
So tell us about that.
Oh my gosh, I'm super excited. So I have a lovely Facebook friend named Emily Ford, who I met because I am not shy and a bit of a nosy person when people are having conversations next to me. So one day I was sitting in Starbucks and I heard these two ladies talking about writing, so I kind of butt in. Emily was very happy. The other woman, I think, wasn't quite so happy.
Yeah.
And anyway, so through that friendship with Emily, she had heard that there was a call out with Posh 7, which is an empowering women's lifestyle magazine in Loudoun County, out of Northern Virginia, that they were looking for really great cancer survivor stories for their October feature. And so she had given them my name. They contacted me, and when they heard my story, they're going to do a feature in October.
That is fantastic. Yes. So it'll hit the streets in October.
Yep. Their print magazine goes out every 2 months, so they have 6 a year. And then they have their online is monthly. So it's going in the print magazine, and it's their October issue.
So we can all see it in about 3 weeks online, too.
Yes, yeah. You should be able to see it online, too. And it's featuring me and then this other really, really cool breast cancer charity group called Stepsisters, who they raise money for that very focused local area to help assist women who are going through breast cancer with paying for childcare, for, you know, getting food on the table, anything that
so
they need.
So for people who don't know, first thing, I will put the link in the show notes so people can have
awesome.
It. And second thing is, you are a cancer survivor, but it's come back. And you were first diagnosed, it was like 3-4 years ago?
Two.
Oh, is it just two?
I know.
It feels like
forever.
Ages.
Like I've always had.
No, but it just feels like you did it and you went through it and it was over
so
and then it came back.
2015.
So you were diagnosed in 2015.
Yep, and then it just came back. So my mom died of breast cancer when she was 39 and I was 7. I got diagnosed, and I was the only girl and the youngest. I got diagnosed at 39, and that year, both my daughter and my youngest, who's a little boy, were both 7. So that was just weird for me. But yeah, I found it both times, but did a double mastectomy, and it caught it before it spread. So I did not have to do radiation and chemo, but I was put on a hormone blocker called tamoxifen because it was a hormone-positive cancer. So was doing what I was supposed to be doing, but I knew deep down, like, my hormones had been off. I've had problems with them ever since having my little boy. And,
yeah, I think when we met, so MK and I met in Colorado, like 6 years ago, maybe 7. It's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, but we met through Pikes Peak Writers out in Colorado. And we had talked about all the hormone stuff when we were out there.
Right, because I was dealing with those issues then too.
Yep. Yeah, that's yeah. So it's come full circle, and
the tamoxifen didn't work, and it came back, and I found it the one night, just a little lump, and thought it was a suture, but it wasn't. It was a cancer. So they did the treatment again. This time they took the ovaries. I don't know if I can say that on here.
So yeah, they took the ovaries.
Cut out the other cancer.
Yep.
Now I'm doing radiation this time, but second time I dodged chemo. So that's my goal.
I think it's a good goal. But you know what? I think you're going to nail it. You're not going to let
this
girl.
So as soon as this radiation's done and they do whatever test, then they'll announce me as cancer-free again. And so I'll be a two-time survivor. So I'm excited.
Look at you. Holy
crap. And I feel so much better now.
Yeah.
Like this time around, I really feel so much lighter and better. I think we got it, you know.
I think I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. So the message though that you want to send to everybody is girls, check the sisters.
Please. And honestly, men, women, it doesn't matter. You have to know your body to know if there's something different, something wrong, even if it doesn't feel wrong, but it's different and you should get it checked. And all too often, all of us fall in that, you know what, I just don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, in a way, it's an inconvenient. And so we put it off and we put it off. But that's when things can turn really bad,
right?
So first of all, just be open enough with yourself to know your body so that then if there's a change, you can go get it checked. Who cares? And if a doctor tries to push you off, push back.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know. And there's been way too much, especially with women, where the doctors think that, oh, you're having some emotional issue or it's just your cycle or whatever. Well, those changes are because of chemical changes within your body. They need to be addressed in a respectful manner. So if your doctor's not doing that, you have to push back and be your own advocate.
Yeah, I agree.
But
I agree.
It has to start with even knowing your body. You know, if you don't know, you're not going to know when it's different. And I have been very, aware of everything because of my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So I noticed right away when I saw.
So my mother had it 42. Both of my grandmothers had it. So I knew, I feel like I'm just waiting because you know it's going to happen, right?
Right.
So 29 is when I started having mammograms. And, but now I'm at 43 and I'm like, all right, it's coming any day now,
No.
But I think, but the point though is you have to get checked. You have to just keep doing it because the sooner you find out, the better for everybody.
Exactly. And the only reason I haven't had to do chemo yet is I was aggressive, I guess, with the mastectomy, but that's only because it hadn't spread. If I did a lumpectomy, I would have had to do chemo. Because I did a mastectomy and it hadn't spread, I didn't have to do chemo.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second time is because I caught it early again and it didn't spread. Once it goes to the lymph nodes.
Yeah, you're done. That's what happened.
Or if it's another, if it's like HER2 negative, which is a different kind of breast cancer, it's harder to treat. They get chemo pretty much no matter what. But yeah, I really want to prevent that. I'll go through everything else.
Well, and I think these days too, you can have the BRCA testing done as well. And
you can.
And that helps a little bit. I mean, that's the most common ones. It's not the most, that doesn't get all of them, but it does get the most common
Interestingly,
ones.
I had that in 2008 and was negative.
Were you? So I was too, which I'm like, okay.
False sense of security. Mm-hmm. And then with this first bout of cancer, they did this extended genetic testing and I'm negative for all of that too, because as my husband says, I never do the easy way. So the doctor told me, she's like, we just don't know enough on how to test you. There's a marker in your body that isn't known to us yet. And so they said that there's a whole group of like familial passing, you know, of something that they just don't know how to test yet. So, but because of that, we know to stay on top of our daughters.
Me too.
As she gets older without freaking her out.
Right. And that's kind of, you have to deal with that too.
She's aware. She's already growing boobs, which is already freaking us out because my husband was a huge boob guy. And I had huge boobs, so it was a great...
So just so everybody knows, Kim K writes romance. We talk about boobs
a lot. Sorry. So he was. Now when he sees them, he's like, it's just this gut-like reaction of they're killers. He's like, he has no respect for any of them. He would like me to just get rid of mine, but I'm not there. So I'm going to keep the reconstructed ones. I'm not there, so.
This is Rider Nation.